All right. It looks like nobody else has joined in the past couple of minutes. Please make sure to, if you're on the phone, please make sure to mute your computer speakers, because otherwise we'll get an echo. And just one last time, if you're on the phone and not on the webinar, there's an email that Megan sent on Tuesday, March 10th at 7:36 a.m. And the handout from that email will be the information that the folks that are on the webinar will be seeing on the screen. And if you need a copy of that, just shoot Megan an email. All right. Well, welcome, everybody. Thanks for joining today. I appreciate your time to be on the call. And I know I've talked to a couple people this morning that weren't able to be on the call today because they are planning presentations on COVID-19. So I know that it is, you know, it's kind of affecting everybody, and I know that some of you are making some decisions about conferences and things, so and other impacts. So I hope the impact for each of you is minimal. If we have time later, we can talk a little bit more about that. But right now, I want to focus on the criteria and move forward with our agenda. So the first thing I want to talk about is actually I'm going to do a little bit of polling, just a couple of questions I have for you regarding what types of credits that you all are giving besides nursing contact hours. I want to just briefly go over the 2012 plan. There is a plan, and I wanted to share that with you up front. So hopefully the information we talk about on the calls and when will make a little more sense. Then we're going to do criteria potpourri, which is just some hopefully helpful information, either from WNA or ANCC or from your peers that has come up that I hope will help you in your understanding of criteria. We'll talk a little bit about the best disclosure language, terminology under criteria potpourri. And then the next thing that we'll do is review some common issues with the educational activity planning record form that was introduced on January's call. So if you weren't on that call and weren't aware, there is a new education activity planning record form. And you'll notice that I've stuck the word planning in there. We usually call it our educational activity record form. I'm sticking the word planning in there because we really do want you to use that form for planning, and we hope that it will be helpful for you in planning and documenting your activities. So I'm going to get that worked in there. It won't be an IRF anymore, but really want to focus on the planning piece and using that document for planning. So if you missed the January call and missed the emails and you need to know more about the new form, please contact Megan and we'll go from there. All right, so we'll look at, I want to look at some common issues with the form that have come up in our reviews at WNA of your provider applications. And then if there's time, we'll have some open discussion and questions. So does anybody have any burning questions before I get started here?
Mary Kay, there was a question about does anyone offer an online orientation for new nurse planners?
Ah, okay. Does anybody who's on offer an online orientation for new nurse planners? I'm not hearing anyone. We actually recently had a call with just our newer primary nurse planners, folks that have only been in the position, you know, a year or so. Some people only, and maybe only a few months. And we did in that call talk a little bit about primary nurse planner orientation and what's involved, but we didn't talk specifically about online. So is anybody...
I believe the Association of Nursing Professional Development has an online course that you can purchase if you're on a...
That's awesome. So ANPD, the ANPD website, if you go there, and they have wonderful resources. Thanks, Joyce.
Sure.
If you go on the ANPD website, then... they have many things available for purchase, and that was one of the follow-ups that we were looking at is could WNA purchase some ANPD things and make them available, and we can't do that, but the ANPD is a great resource for purchasing items that have to do with nursing continuing professional development. All right. Thank you all. All right, so I have, for those of you that are on the webinar, I have a poll, and I hope that you can see it. All right, the poll is open. My question is, and for you folks that aren't on the webinar, you can think about this. I'm interested in knowing if people interact with planning other credits for continuing professional development. And the choices are, I'm not involved in planning activities with credit types other than nursing contact hours. I plan activities involving other credits myself, or I plan activities with other professional disciplines in other departments. So I just want to take a minute to get a little bit of a read on that. Okay, it looks like there's no new results. So over half of you plan activities with other professional disciplines or departments that involve other credit types. Okay, that is helpful for me to know. And then I'm just going to, for those of you that are not on the webinar, the next question being asked is, have you ever had reworker issues because the number of credits was different between nursing contact hours and other type of credits? And the answer is yes, no, or not applicable. I'm just looking at, as soon as the answers stop coming in, I will move on from them. All right. Okay. Thank you. I'm just trying to collect a little bit of data here that will be helpful coming up. So that is all I'm really going to say about that. And we can also, later in the call, if we have time, we could, you know, if there are issues, we could definitely talk about them as well. So I saw a couple of you have had issues in the past. All right. So next thing I want to talk about is the 2020 call plan. And, again, just so some of the content of the calls will make more sense about why we're doing what we're doing when we're doing it. In January, the new educational activity planning record form was rolled out. Again, I'm sticking the word planning in there. for a reason, because we really want you to use that documentation to plan. In March, this call, we're reviewing common issues with that form. In May, we'll continue with that. Today, we're going to talk about gap and evidence and outcome and some of the common issues we see in our reviews that reduce your scores. And then in May, we'll talk about the rest of this form, kind of all the other parts of it. And then we'll move to common issues with the provider applications. And the reason we want to do this is because ANCC has recently increased the rigor of their scoring. And so I want to be sure there's a really good understanding of what's expected. There will be an updated provider application coming out this summer. So if you're in the cycles later this year, you'll see that. So what I wanted to make sure to cover those things this year. We'll have other topics as well. We won't need to limit to those, but just so you know that there is a plan and that that's what we'll be focusing on. All right. And you're always, always welcome to suggest topics in advance of the call. Usually if you do that about, usually the week before is super helpful. About 3 days before is fine too, because I would like your ideas. All right. So let's talk about best disclosure language. And there happened to be a question that came up about this. And it actually was really timely because this is something that has come up on a recent call with the Nurse Peer Review Leaders and ANCC. So it does affect all of you, so I wanted to put it out there. And I wanna talk through this one. I usually say there's no right or wrong answers. There is actually a right answer to this, but if you're not sure, don't let that stop you from typing in the chat what you think, or just on the phone saying what you think. So best disclosure language, and in the handout, the rationale for which would be the best is ANCC would like us to have applicants use disclosure language that states or implies the nurse planner has reviewed the information and determined there are no conflicts of interest. So the nurse planner for the activity is really the one who's responsible for doing that. Okay. All right. So any thoughts on that? The choices are planners and presenters have disclosed no conflicts of interest. Planners and presenters have no conflicts of interest. No one in control of content has reported any relevant financial relationships. Presenters have no conflicts of interest. Or no one in control of content for the activity has any conflicts of interest. Does anybody want to take a shot at which one is not, which of these that are incorrect, is there one you know for sure that is not correct? Let's start there. Ask the question again, please. Mm-hmm. So, on the webinar screen and in your handout that Megan had sent on Tuesday, there's an exercise best disclosure language. And there's five statements there. And if you have a thought on which one is is the best to use, or if there's one in there that you know isn't correct. Okay, so we're getting some chat messages. Okay, so Megan, I only saw one, and I saw we had a couple, but I only saw one response.
Yep.
So someone
so we
has said...
Three.
Good.
Sorry.
Okay.
We have three votes for number four being incorrect and one vote for the third one being incorrect.
Okay. So the fourth, okay, the fourth one is indeed incorrect because the reason for that is because it's great that the presenters have no conflict of interest, but that does not include the planners or anybody else that has control of content. So the fourth one is not inclusive enough. And then somebody had said number three,
mm-hmm.
and that is correct. That is, it's correct that it's incorrect. Sorry, that wasn't very clear. So yeah, number three, no one in control of content has reported any relevant financial relationships. And that is not the best statement to use, and that is because ANCC really wants the language to reflect that the nurse planner has determined that there are no conflicts of interest. Okay, I just saw Sarah's message pop up. Okay, second one is incorrect. Planners and presenters have no conflict of interest. That is true. It is not the best one to use. Honestly, that's the one I used until recently because I thought that covered everybody. But it needs to cover everybody who's in control of content. And then number one is not the best one to use either for two reasons. One, it limits it to planners and presenters. And there could be others in control of content. And it also states that they have disclosed no conflicts of interest. That saying that they've disclosed no conflicts of interest does not imply that the nurse planner has reviewed the information and determined that there are no conflicts of interest. So, the best language to use for your disclosure is that no one in control of content for the activity has any conflicts of interest. And for this activity is optional. It just sounded better grammatically to me. So no one in control of content has any conflicts of interest. That would be language that would include everybody in control of content and that the nurse planner has reviewed the information and determined that there are no conflicts of interest, rather than just saying nobody has reported any. Okay? So, we will look forward to, and this isn't something that you have to go and change all your templates right now on, but as you go forward and you're revising materials, if you have the opportunity, it is something that we would like you to do. And if you could do that, I know it'll take time. I know people use templates. And that would be something to work toward having that. Sorry, I got distracted by a chat. All right. Another issue that comes up, not so much with providers, but sometimes, is using certificates on promotional material, what to put on there as far as what participants are awarded. So the reason I put this in here is because we've changed a lot of language recently as far as, you know, now we're using the term nursing continuing professional development. We are using the word credits a lot. We're using CNE, but ANCC has a very specific requirement for certificates, and we've seen folks drifting away from that, and I think it's just because of the language that we've started using to refer to this information. Okay, so we have a set of statements. And for those of you that aren't on the webinar and don't have the handout in front of you, I'm looking for which one is correct. The statements are participants are awarded 2 NCPD hours, which is Nursing Continuing Professional Development. Participants are awarded 2 AMCC contact hours. Participants are awarded 2 CMEs. Participants are awarded 2 credits of nursing professional development, or participants are awarded 2 contact hours. Thank you, John. The last one is correct.
Yep.
Thanks, Linda. So the last one is correct. Even though ANCC is now using the term continuing professional development, that's not part of the statement. We don't ever want to see ANCC contact hours. A lot of our individual educational activity applicants like want to use that. We don't see it so much with the providers, but it does come up once in a while. We're just not, we're not to use the term ANCC contact hours. CNEs is also incorrect in this context. And the one thing that we have seen from providers is the participants are awarded 2 credits. So even though we have started using that language, like most other disciplines, we still want on our certificates or on our promotional material or wherever you're going to be using the statement, you want to say that participants are awarded contact hours. So that's the key. That's the key there, to use the term contact hours. All right. So hopefully going forward that'll be something to pay attention to. Questions since January, really haven't had that many come up from providers. So I'm going to go ahead and continue with the exercise, and it won't take the whole time. And if there's questions or discussions after that, then you can talk through any that come up. All right. So on the new education activity planning record form, there is the first section on educational development. And it's a little different than the old one. B asks under educational development in the, I still call it the IRF, asks you to summarize the professional practice gap. And C asks you about the evidence that's used to validate the practice gap. So describing why the practice gap exists. And we see a lot of different things here. We've tried to put some hints into the book so that you've got a clear picture of what we want in your documentation. And just as a reminder, the summary of the practice gap should describe the problem, improvement, or need for new information. And I think a key that you probably don't always think about, but you might want to start thinking about a little more, is can the WNA reviewers tell what the problem is? So, you know, it's hard enough to keep up with documentation. It's hard enough to keep up with really good documentation, but the documentation needs to describe a problem, improvement, or need for new information. And if somebody else is reading it, they need to be able to understand what that is. So that's something to think about when you when you submit your sample activity records with your every 3-year renewal application. And then as far as the evidence to validate the practice gap, your narrative should describe why the practice gap exists, and it should include, and this is all in the new documentation form that we went over in January, the narrative should include how do you know the practice gap exists, what data were identified that demonstrated that, and then what did the data show? And so these are the questions that we're looking to have answered when you fill out the educational activity record.
Mary Kay, there's a note in the chat about a request for education identified on an evaluation doesn't confirm that a practice gap exists either.
Can you say that one more time?
Either. A request for education identified on an evaluation doesn't confirm that a practice gap exists either.
Okay, so if you are using evaluation results, you want to make sure that when you're looking at those, that you are really looking at the data. And this might not be what was meant by that. And but it's what comes to mind right now is sometimes when we get, you no longer have to put all your evaluation summary in the record, but sometimes we would get evaluation summaries put in there that really didn't have a lot to do with the gap identified. So that's what I think about when I hear that statement. Is there, for the person that submitted that, is there a different interpretation?
Hi, Mary Kay, it's Robin. I put the comment in there because I'll see it on that the practice gap is this topic was suggested on in the previous conference evaluation.
Oh, okay. All right, got it. So, yeah, and it's great. Thanks, Robin. Sorry, I interrupted. Mm-hmm. Did you want to say any more about that before I do?
Nope, that was it.
Okay, thanks. All right. So one thing you can do when you're asking, because I think a lot of people have a question on the evaluation, what topics would you like to see in the future? And that question does not identify a practice gap. So you have to be careful when you're thinking about your practice gap to really identify problems. People are interested in something, that's great, but continuing nursing education does need to address a problem or opportunity for improvement or new information. I've seen especially our providers switch that question from what are you interested in, what topics would you like to see for the next conference, changing that to, what problems do you see in your professional practice, and, you might even narrow it down to a topic in, renal care. What problems do you see in your practice, and that kind of question is phrased a little differently and can help you get at the problems and the gaps rather than just to find out what people are interested in. Robin, did that get at it?
Yes, it does.
Okay, thank you. So if you have that question on your evaluation, you might want to think about changing that from what are people interested in seeing or what topics would they like to see, to asking them about practice gaps. And it can be, you don't have to say what professional practice gaps do you see. You can, which is also fine, but if you want to go with something like what problems are you seeing, what improvements do you see that could be made, that's a different method, then what are you interested in? Okay. Anybody else have any thoughts on that? Okay. All right. So, get a little exercise. And again, for those of you that are not on the webinar, we're going to go over three gaps and three sets of evidence. So the first gap, and this is actually an exercise that we went over with our review team, our WNA review team, and I thought it would be good to share with you. So you can put your reviewer cap on, everybody, and kind of take a look and analyze this. If you were a primary nurse planner and one of your nurse planners was filling out the documentation for your planning and you saw this, would you be satisfied with it, and why or why not? So the gap is the problem we're addressing with education is nurses don't use best practice for central line changes. And the evidence statement is the gap exists because nurses don't use best practice for central line changes. Some nurses use best practice and some don't. At a staff meeting, a nurse said she was confused about central line changes, and a lot of nurses don't do central line changes correctly. Okay, primary nurse planners and others on the call, what are your thoughts about this?
I would be more interested in the Class C rates.
Okay. So.
As showing a gap in practice.
Yep. Evidence to show a gap in practice. Okay. Good. What else? Oh, Megan, can you see those questions?
I can. There was a comment that it, they are coming in strong.
Okay, everybody who has answered this question, welcome to the WNA review. Wouldn't that be wonderful?
So there was one comment about it being weak and redundant. There's another note about where is the evidence beyond observation. Another note that says three is correct, summarizes gap analysis process. Another note that says there's no actual data to support. Another one that says doesn't address how you know this or any evidence. There's another one, would want specifics in the evidence looking at CLABSI rate and looking at actual practice on the floor. No evidence, no numbers used. Look for rates / numbers. No, it doesn't provide specific data to support the gap, just one person. And this is anecdotal. Is there data to support increase in infection rates? Choice one, include CLABSI rates, identified issues with initial or annual orientation / competency.
Phew. All right. Yeah. All right. All right. So, that's great. it needs to be elaborated on further. The question that I have written down for myself is, what is it specifically that isn't being done or needs to be done? Or what constitutes best practice? Because we really don't know what is or isn't being done that's causing the problem. Evidence doesn't describe how the person knows the practice gap exists. It just restates it. It's vague. It's redundant. So, yeah. A plus. All right. Okay. The second is an identified gap is the lack of preceptors in clinics. This course will enable participants to identify leadership skills, describe the adult learning process, and explain the role of the preceptor. And the evidence is that the gap was determined by looking at the numbers of preceptors in clinics. So how would you improve this? Any thoughts? Let's go back up to, and this is in the...
I have a note that says multiple attendees are typing. Okay.
All right.
So hang on.
Okay. And for those of you that are only on the call, I just went back to the previous page of the handout, the evidence to validate the professional practice gap. The narrative should include how does the applicant know the practice gap exists, what data were identified, and what does the data show.
We have two comments so far, Mary Kay. We need the numbers and how it explains the gap, and would want to look at how lack of preceptors is affecting training of new staff.
Okay.
Yep, so far.
All right. So...
The gap says the lack of preceptors in clinic, but doesn't explain what issue or issues not having enough preceptors in clinics is causing.
Awesome. And Megan, what was the very first thing that you said before how this is affecting the training of new staff?
Need the numbers and how it explains the gap.
Any other thoughts with this one? I think this is the answers that we have so far are indirectly getting at what I wanted to get at with this. And that is, as a reviewer, we would score this as not fully met. Remember that you need to be able to describe the problem in terms of nursing knowledge, skill, or practice. So, yeah, there is a problem with the lack of preceptors in clinics, but you can educate all you want, and it's not going to solve the problem of a lack of preceptors in clinics. So you have to dig down a little bit further, and the person that has said, what is the issue? What issue is the lack of preceptors causing? Was right on. So you want to be able to explain the gap in terms of knowledge, skill, or practice. And then the evidence, which should include how does the applicant know that the gap exists, what data were identified that determined the practice gap, and what did the data show. Definitely is not met by the evidence statement. The gap was determined by looking at the numbers of preceptors in clinic. So it just says, a gap exists, and it doesn't meet what we would, as reviewers, look at when we're looking at does this meet the criteria. All right, one more.
This is Julie from Children's. Do you think that statements are created that because a lot of people don't take the time to do a more in-depth needs assessment when they identify kind of a generic topic or a generic issue, like you said, that they don't dig deeper and they don't do that more in-depth needs assessment to hone in on what exactly do we need to educate on to improve?
That's exactly it, Julie. I think two reasons that we see these type of answers. One is just everybody's busy and trying their best to document, and sometimes you know what you're talking about, but it doesn't get fully explained in the records. And I think definitely with the need for, once you identify the gap, and it goes, Julie, what you said just went right along with the criteria. EDP 1 is identify the gap. EDP 2 is do your drill down and find out, is the gap in knowledge, skill, or practice? What is the gap? What is causing the gap? So absolutely. And I think it's a step that gets skipped a lot. And you can, as a reviewer, you can tell that when you look at the activity records. But it's probably the most crucial piece of this, because you can identify a gap and you can offer an activity, but if you don't really know if the gap is in knowledge, skill, and practice, and if you don't know why the gap is occurring, then you may miss the mark with your education.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say definitely once you've identified that gap, I call it a drill down. And I know I said it before, I think the fastest way to do that is talk to people. There are definitely other sources of data for that. But I think one of the things that has helped the most is to find out from the people that are having the problem what their perception of the problem is. So great. Thanks, Julie. Great point. Okay. All right. Here is one more. The gap is the problem we're addressing is nurses' lack of knowledge about cultural norms among patients that affect their compliance with discharge instructions. And the evidence states the gap exists because nurses from cultures other than Hmong are not familiar with Hmong culture beliefs and norms that affect their ability to carry out discharge instructions. We know the gap exists from talking with nurse managers and others. We know the gap exists by looking at our readmission rates for the Hmong population, and the data show this population is readmitted for complications more than other cultural subpopulations. So as reviewers, we look at does the narrative gap statement. The problem we're addressing is nurses' lack of knowledge about cultural norms among patients that affect compliance with discharge instructions. Does that describe the problem? If you were a reviewer reading that, would you understand what the problem is? I think, yeah. As a reviewer, I can look at this and know that they're talking about a knowledge gap. Yes, Mary, thank you. And we can tell what the problem is. Because it always helps to begin, the problem we're addressing is. All right, and then for the evidence should include how the, okay, so you're right. It is very concise and easy to identify. Your evidence should include how does the applicant know, what data were identified, and what did the data show. And this explanation does all that. All right. So those are a couple of the things that we see the most issues with in your activity samples that you include. With your renewal applications every 3 years is the practice gap and the evidence to validate the practice gap. And the summary and evidence is new. Oh, good. Thanks, John. And so that's something that we're seeing a lot that I wanted to share with you and work through. And we'll see. I think we have time to do the outcomes. And let me just pop on to, oh, good. Thanks, Crystal. For those of you on the phone, there's just a few people popping in and indicating that these are helpful, so I'm glad. For those of you that are on the phone only, I just popped into the WNA website and went under the education page and went under the resources page. And I refer to this handout all the time. So I always say it's on the website, it's on the website, it's on the website. So here it is, it's on the website. This was done after the very first big criteria change, and it describes the difference between learning outcomes and objectives. And we still have, I think, for our individual activity applicants, we see a lot of issues with this. We do still see issues from providers trying to get, we need to get away from thinking primarily about objectives and think more about where do we want to get, where do we want our education to lead, what is our learning outcome that we want. So if you haven't seen the handout, I would really encourage you to go to the WNA website under education and resources and pull this up and take a look at it. The difference between learning objectives and learning outcomes, and I'm not going to go through this right now, but learning outcomes are much broader and starts with the end in mind. What do you want to accomplish with the activity? And it is a broad, they are broad statements. All right, so outcomes are not objectives. If you're planning a conference with multiple sessions, you don't need an outcome for every education session. You can write your outcomes for the conference as a whole. And if you want, what I see a lot, which is, I think, helpful for people, is if you have a conference and there's three major themes, and you want an outcome for each theme, you could do it that way. What do we want our participants to accomplish with this particular set of information? So you can have one or more outcomes for your conference. Outcomes must be measurable and measured. I know that when we used to use objectives, if we used the right words, then we were fine. But your outcomes need to be measured. And I think most everybody is doing a really good job with that. All right. So, again, put on your reviewer cap. There is, for those just on the phone, I have a gap written here that I'll briefly read. And then the outcomes. And I want to know, if you were a reviewer, what would you tell your applicant to help them change these outcome measures to meet the criteria for how to write and think about outcome measures? So for those of you on the webinar, I apologize, you're going to hear and see it. So the gap is molecular characterization is a growing approach to cancer treatment as researchers and clinicians learn more about the benefits to the patient. In 2018, FDA approved 22 new targeted therapies. 20 to 25 are projected for possible approval in 2019. This area of research is growing rapidly, which means oncologists are ordering testing on biopsy specimens that nurses are not familiar with. The gap is in knowledge of the next generation of biopsy procedures and the rationale for the procedures. So if I'm looking at that piece as a reviewer, it's a lot of information, but I do get the gist of what the problem is. And I think the sentence that says the gap is in knowledge of these biopsy procedures and the rationale really gets to it. The information before that, I think, is really helpful. So the outcomes that were written for this gap is to list 5 components of next-generation biopsy sequencing, give examples of sequencing report interpretation, describe the concept and application of cell-free DNA technology in cancer therapy, and give examples of liquid biopsy report interpretation. So the first thing I want to know is, what's the first thing that you notice about this list of outcomes? Do they look like outcomes, or do they look like something else? They're objective. Thanks, Sam. Okay, yeah, they really are written as objective. Yep, okay, got it. Oh, all right. For those of you that aren't on the webinar, there's like this slew of their objectives. Yep, they are. They're written as objective. So what would you do for us as being a reviewer? They are not measurable. Thank you. For us as a reviewer, how would we help this applicant? But for you, as a primary nurse planner, again, if you had a nurse planner that was very excited and brought this to you, what would you tell them? How would you explain the why and how they need to be different? I'm not looking for us to rewrite them right now. I'm just looking at what would you tell your nurse planner to do in this situation, or how we would change these and why. Okay, Megan, are you watching chat? Okay. So the first thing we said to explain that these are objectives, I would point them to the handout on the WNA website. Another thing is, you want to have them think about broad statements, or broader statements anyway, that focus on the desired change in nursing knowledge. And somebody in the chat said this a little differently, but I think that is maybe what you were getting at. And I barely see the chat when they fly by. Okay. What else might you tell your nurse planner about
that? WAPC, Charlene Galston. Piper Probst, Farrow. Pam Ethel Frater Hospital.
Joyce Doherty, Metro Health, University of Michigan Health.
Mary Carr, Essentia Health. Amy Sting, St. Cloud Hospital.
I'm not
Julie
sure why we're doing all these
Wisconsin.
Right now. But it's one of it's
Teresa
almost
Pratt,
one of
WNA.
We will end
7 names
end
not recorded.
We'll end the call in just a minute. So explain that they are objectives. Provide the handout from the WNA website. We want these to focus on the desired change in nursing knowledge, and focus on what is the change that you want as a result of the activity. So that's really what you're looking at with outcomes: is what do you want to happen? Do you want to change in knowledge, skill, or practice? And what is that change? And I think that is really the key to outcomes, is what change are you looking for? Starting the planning with the end in mind, and there's an article that I wanted to get that I
don't have on that. But starting to plan with the end in mind. So what is your problem? What do you want to occur as a result of the education? And how are you going to measure it? I think is key as well. And I think that's a great place to start, planners, with those questions. What do you want to happen? What's the problem? What do you want to happen? And how are you going to measure it? And then you could encourage that person to, you know, look at the statements that they made or look at the gap statement that they made. If the gap is in knowledge of the next generation biopsy procedures and rationale, again, what do they want the result of the education to be? So go back and look at the gap, and that's how your gap is going to align with your outcome is, okay, here's the gap. What do you want the result to be, and how are you going to measure it? One of the other reviewers suggested that if you had the statements, if you had the statements and they would be measurable on a post-test, the outcome could be that a certain number of questions would be answered correctly on the post-test. So that's a little bit different way to look at it. Okay, it's 1 o'clock, and what I will do is I will I'll detail this a little bit more and send you not only the exercises, but also what the answers are to the exercises. And hopefully that'll be a helpful resource as you go forward. Thank you very much for joining the call today. If you have questions, please contact me offline, and we'll go from there. Thank you guys so much.